And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hey everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Wings for Breakfast, our twice weekly Red Wings podcast here on The Athletic, presented by BetMGM. I am Max Boltman. With me as always is Prashant Iyer, and we've got some news to finally break down. The Red Wings have had now their end of season availabilities. It coincides, as we suspected, with the announcement of an extension for Jeff Blashill. The Athletic's Pierre LeBrun reported on the Athletic Hockey Show Wednesday that length of the extension is 2 years. Red Wings did not want to announce that. Yzerman says it's a personal policy not to, which I can actually frankly understand. But with Pierre reporting it's 2 years, that is some good context to understand all of this. Dan Bylsma, the other bit of news, will not be returning. Going to pursue other opportunities, which leaves a job open on the Red Wings bench that they'll have to fill now. But we'll get to that in a moment, Prashant. I guess I just wanted to kind of get your first reaction to the extension for Blashill.
I mean, it took 10 days to finally get the news that I think almost all of us had expected was coming. You know, I don't think the extension shouldn't have come as any surprise. I think if you sort of take a step back and look at this team, you know, as Yzerman has to do, plain and simple, he really laid it out in his press conference. I have to give Jeff better players in order to be able to really expect better results. And if you sort of look at Blashill over the course of the seasons that he's been here, the Red Wings simply haven't really ever given him at any point in time a lot of talent to work with to really have the expectations that, you know, things should have gone better than really the way that they are. And so I think as you sort of step back and you view that, view kind of the news through that lens, then you sort of come to the decision of, okay, well, do you want to be the team that continually turns over their coaching staff when really the problem is there's not enough talent here? Or would you rather be the team that maybe has a guy that serves as almost like a voice of stability, seems to be doing some things that you like with some of the younger players, maybe has a philosophy that, you know, on paper sounds reasonable when outlined as kind of a defense first 200-foot hockey player type. And if you sort of view it through that lens, it sort of makes sense that, you know, he's a guy in this situation that, you know, really hasn't been given enough to expect more. And therefore, you know, there's sort of sticking with stability here.
Yeah. I mean, Yzerman made a comment at one point saying, you know, I can change the coach year after year after year, but ultimately until the team is better, it's not going to matter. I'm paraphrasing there, but I can find that quote actually if you give me a minute. But you know, I thought that was very revealing, and I thought, you know, it's an idea we talked about on the show a week or 2 weeks ago, of, you know, especially as we actually got into, I think as we talked about the Sabres, of like you can change the coach every year if you want to, and if the next guy comes in and the expectation is, okay, the standard here is this, these are your players, the same players the last guy had, good luck. I mean, then the Red Wings probably weren't going to get traction if they boiled down their results over the last 5-6 years to Jeff Blashill. And, you know, as we've talked about on the show, like that was never really a fair understanding of what Jeff Blashill's job is. And I don't think that makes him immune from criticism. It doesn't mean that if you're the coach of a bad team, everything you do is right and everything that happens that goes wrong is just a product of talent. I think the Red Wings had the talent to score more goals than they did this year, for example. but I don't know that they had the talent to win more games, at least not more than one or two more games, ultimately, than they did. I think they won the season series with Carolina. I would not have expected that. They played the season series with Tampa, much closer than I expected. They did way worse against like a team like Chicago or Nashville than I'd have expected. So these things cut both ways, but I ultimately think law of averages says, I ultimately think the Red Wings felt like they were more competitive. They were a competitive team this year. Yzerman liked how Jeff Blashill worked with him on, bringing the young players into the lineup without just handing over spots. And then I think when you get back to that comment about not wanting change after change after change, the answer you boil down here to is they're fairly happy with Jeff Blashill. Not so happy as to give him like a, blank check or anything like that, but certainly happy enough to bring him back and sounds like conscious enough of the state of their roster to not, put too much stock into ultimately the team's results when making that decision.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of how you have to really view it. And can you criticize the move? Certainly, you absolutely can. I mean, I can sit here and I can nitpick and say, well, has he really done enough for the young players to say that we're really warrant that fashion? I think on the surface, it sort of sounds like the philosophy that he wants to teach these players definitely sounds great. Definitely makes sense. I think, objectively, if you look at sort of where all of them stacked up, statistically, none of them had a particularly good year. I mean, Filip Zadina, as much as we want to talk about him being a sniper, a playmaker, his points per game dropped and his goals above replacement actually drops. And so he actually doesn't look objectively as good as maybe he does in years past. We've had this discussion at length about Dylan Larkin. You've had the discussion at length about Filip Hronek. And so it's sort of, I can nitpick there, but at least from the standpoint of, well, okay, you can continue to turn this team over, but at a minimum, there's still not enough talent here to really have any better expectations. I mean, you and I think, said it a few weeks ago, the Red Wings had finished with more points than both of us thought they would. I mean, I think we both had them around 45 or 47 points. The Wings finished with 48 points. End up being marginally better than we thought they would be. And then, they end up playing Carolina well, Tampa well, like you said. I think there's room to criticize. I think there's room to nitpick. But I think at the end of the day, sticking with stability certainly doesn't feel like the wrong move when you sort of view a team like Buffalo that's really turned over coaching a lot recently and still can't seem to get it right with the amount of talent there.
I actually think it's going to be kind of an interesting case scenario here when you have the Red Wings and the way they've done it versus some rebuilding teams that have made a couple changes already. I mean, the New York Rangers will have kind of the third coach of their rebuild next year. They're a team that I think has a very bright future, certainly with the talent that they've had, the lottery luck that they've had, the free agency success that they've had. I certainly expect that they will be more successful sooner than the Red Wings. But when you look at them, you look at the Devils that are on their second coach, who are the Devils? They got
Nazrudin, right? Is that where
is he still the guy there?
I believe so. I don't think they've fired him. Although, with the coaching revolving door, it's so hard to like keep up. I mean, now we're talking about Blashill being what the third longest tenured
yes.
Head coach right now behind Cooper and who's the other one that's ahead of him?
Paul Maurice.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Nazrudin's assistant head coach.
But he was the interim.
So they had
Hines, Nazrudin, and now Ruff.
Yeah.
I don't know if we have to count Nazrudin as a head coach as an interim, but you get my point. Like there's teams out there that are taking a very different approach in terms of how many new voices than the Red Wings. And I'm not saying that the coach decision is going to be ultimately what makes any of those teams successful or not successful. Ultimately, I think, as we talked about on the show, NHL coaches probably have less of an impact on the overall, the inner workings of an individual game in hockey than they would in, other sports. But I do think it's an interesting organizational sociology experiment, I guess, to see how these two different things go.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, I don't know that you can definitively come down and say one way or another what should have happened. And again, you watch all these other teams that have turned over so many different coaches, And then the critique ends up being exactly that. Like, okay, there's no stability in the locker room. The organization needs stability. On the flip side, you have a team like Detroit where, okay, well, they're going to stick with it because they like the philosophy. They like the ideology. And at the end of the day, they just need to put more talent there and maybe things can get better. So, you know, we'll see. I don't think it's above, you know, I don't think it's a, this move is maybe above reproach or above critique, but at the end of the day, I don't have a problem just sticking with stability and doing it on a short term, like 2 years.
Yes, I think that's certainly fair to say. And I wouldn't read too much. I saw some people on Twitter today saying, oh, 2 years, right? Bedard, Michkov, those guys, 2 years. His last extension was 2 years as well. I think it's just a fairly standard length.
Yeah, for, I mean, two. I think it's
spot they are.
I think it's a standard length, but also at the same time, like it's probably
like it's shorter than maybe like what you'd give a guy with the first time you hire him or anything like that. But like for the situation that this is in, 2 years is I think what we predicted, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, at least I think I tweeted a couple weeks back that I thought it was going to be a 2 week. Or 2 year extension, not 2 week. 2 week would be a little bit wild, but you know, 2 year extension in that regard, and it makes sense because probably the next 2 years are the last 2 years where you can really say the Wings are restocking the cupboard, or at least yeah. It should be the last 2 years where you're really saying
they're going to succeed,
right? If you're going to be successful, the next 2 years should be the last 2 years where you can maybe skirt by with, you know, you maybe can hang on to your position without necessarily having a ton of victories. But, you know, if you're talking about this team being successful in their rebuild, you're talking about the right guys being able to come in and have a huge impact. If this team is not turning the corner in 2 years, that's where I think there's a lot more leverage to say, all right, we got to make a change here because, you know, things are just not moving in the right direction. But up until that point in time, I don't have a problem erring on the side of stability.
No, nor do I. The one change that the Red Wings did make was Dan Bylsma is departing. Steve Yzerman said that the biggest reason for him leaving was that Bylsma is a head coach at heart and he wants to do that. However, we had talked about this, you know, independent of that, that this was an area that the Red Wings could really stand to make a change anyway. So, you know, certainly, you know, everyone has their reasons for job choices, for decisions, all of that. Regardless of ultimately kind of the motivation behind this vacancy, now that it exists, I think this is one of the pretty big storylines of the early part of the summer here. And it doesn't sound like they're going to rush this process at all. Jeff Blashill said he does not think it's going to be a quick search for the Red Wings here. They're going to kind of find the fits and narrow it down. But I thought I asked him kind of what the items he'd be looking for in identifying a fit would be. And I thought his answer was interesting and ultimately I think should be pretty encouraging for those who have found the Red Wings power play to be bland, predictable, all of the things that we heard all year and that we, I think, said all year. It was not a very good power play. It was, what did it end, 11.4% or something right around there?
Yep, historically awful.
Really bad power play. So here is what Jeff Blashill said about what they're looking for. He said the power play is an area that needs to be better, and that's not certainly on any one particular coach or any one particular person. The guys that are on the ice have to do a better job, and we've got to do as good a job as possible at preparing them and giving them a plan that works. So different offensive ideas, probably use the word tactician, especially a guy with an offensive kind of mindset, somebody that brings in something, there's some different, potentially unique ideas. It's hard to come up with things that are real different or unique in this game. That's not necessarily how you win, but ultimately, is there some fresh ideas or unique ideas or different thought processes? End quote. Prashant, I have to imagine that's music to your ears.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I think if you watch the Red Wings power play this year and really watched it over the last couple of years where they have been absolutely atrocious. I mean, we're talking, you know, under Bylsma, they were the worst power play across the board in every power play metric last year. And this year, we're very close to being worst across the board in every power play metric. So, you know, the biggest things when you watch that power play was they didn't vary the way they attacked the zone when they were coming in on entries. There was very little movement of the puck, very little crossing of lanes, very little, you know, desire to generate dangerous chances by looking for dangerous passing lanes. And there was very poor puck recovery. Basically, everything you're looking for in a power play just was not there the last 2 years. And so, to me, this was by far the most important change that had to be made this offseason from a coaching standpoint was, you know, you had to come up with a different philosophy. And the way that Blashill sort of describes what he's looking for, I think is exciting for a couple of reasons. So obviously, number one, you want a better power play. That has to happen. And to me, you know, all the people who say, well, you need more talent, you need more talent, you need more talent. That's absolutely not the case. We mentioned this a couple weeks back. Buffalo was a league average power play. Had the Red Wings been a league average power play, they're on the fringe of actually contending with the Stars and Predators for that final playoff spot. But because they're not, you know, they're not even close there. And so you don't necessarily need the elite talent in order to have a successful power play. You need a scheme, tactics, and all of that. So I think that's really encouraging on that front. But the second thing is bringing in a guy like that is counter to the ideology of Jeff Blashill. And I think that's a really strong move, because one of the things you have to avoid is ever becoming an echo chamber. Whenever you have an echo chamber and you have a bunch of people who are all on the same page, always thinking the same way, I think progress gets stunted. I think there's a default to this is the way we've done it and that's the way we're going to do it. But if you bring in someone who thinks the game differently, has a different mindset, and you put them in charge of your forwards and you put them in charge of the power play, you potentially get a generation or a hybrid of some of those ideologies, and potentially you get a much nicer product to watch. So I think I'm excited for two reasons. Number one, to see what this person does, you know, to the power play. But number two, how does this, you know, Jeff seems to be a very open-minded person to a lot of new information. How does this change Blashill's approach to the game, to his philosophy, and does it do anything different that really allows the Wings to maybe take advantage of some of their more skilled players?
Right. I mean, this hire is ultimately going to, yes, run the power play, but ultimately work with the forwards and be a voice in the room. And so ultimately, when the coaches are talking about various things, whether it be some scheme elements, how they want to forecheck, how they want to enter the zone, how they want to, you know, have their rush organized, yada yada. Assistant coaches in there for that. When they're talking about style of play, what they want to emphasize, assistant coaches in on that. So you talk about bringing in someone who's a tactician, and yes, I think that helps your power play. That's probably the facet of the game where, you know, I kind of quote unquote tactics, you know, face offs and power plays would be two of the first things that come to mind that you can actually kind of run quote unquote plays for, because hockey is a very fluid game. Things change fast, right? But ultimately, if you have that offensive mindset, you have kind of an instinct for these things. I think the ripple effects of that onto your overall team can show up. And I do respect that, that Blashill's kind of emphasizing that, you know, even when, you know, a lot of his overall, at least in the messaging to the media, tends to be about, you know, start with the defense, don't give anything up, and then build out from there offensively. I respect the, you know, to come out and say, you know, I need a tactician, I need an offensive mind. And I do think that makes the Red Wings a stronger team, as you said, when it's not, you know, as much as I think, you know, you certainly want a unified voice from a coaching staff, you also want different inputs going into what the ultimate philosophy and messaging is. Not all through people who maybe are thinking of things the exact same way. That's how you get the best results, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. And that's not just limited to hockey. That's not limited to sport. Really, at the end of the day, you make the most progress when you have people who think differently and have people who approach things differently, and you get different creative, you know, problem-solving skills out of that. And so, you know, at the end of the day, if you have a lot of people that are open-minded, bringing different voices and are encouraged to kind of speak that, I think this becomes a much better product. So, you know, even beyond just what this person would do for the power play, hearing Blashill describe what he's looking for, I think is a very encouraging sign to see, because it may have a huge influence on what we see on the ice.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, You heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
All right, you knew it was coming. Who fits this description? I mean, it is certainly, I find, one of the most challenging things in beat writing is like in this little window before you can kind of really, you know, start identifying who these candidates are. On the coaching front, it's very hard to know whose like specialty is what, right? Like, you know who's in charge of the power play and you know what power plays are good. But why is it the coach? Is it the tactics? Is it the players? It can be really hard to, just as it is hard to source blame, source credit in some ways. And so I do plan to dig in a little bit on this and try to start figuring out who are some of the hot names on the power play front, who are some of the tacticians that are available on the open market. But I suspect you have at least a name or two that immediately jumped to your mind when you first heard that quote from Blashill.
Yeah, I mean, when I heard that quote, I'll go to the drum that I've literally been banging for 2 years. Somebody give Igor Larionov a job in the NHL. And what a better situation than Detroit, right? I mean, the guy is literally nicknamed the professor because he thought the game at a higher level than just about anybody that played for that Red Wings team. It's what allowed him to be an effective player at 43 years of age in the 2002 Stanley Cup Finals, because he's just so, so smart in the way that he approaches the hockey game. And now, you know, recently he's gotten into coaching. He's expressed an interest in coming over to the NHL to coach. He's done a nice job with the Russian teams as he's worked with them in the World Junior Championships, particularly the forwards more so than the defense. I think there's certainly questionable tactics that exist at 5-on-5, but at least when you hear him speak about kind of what he wants to see from forwards, it's almost like you can match it up to some of what Blashill's saying with, you know, being a tactician and sort of thinking through those processes. And I think he would be an excellent guy to, you know, give him his first shot at being an assistant coach in the NHL level, give him the opportunity in Detroit, allow him to have a hand in the way that the forwards are managed, and allow him to have a hand in the way that the power play is run. And I think you have the potential for a really exciting and innovative scheme that might bring some new ideas and new challenges for kind of opposing penalty kills.
I think it's an interesting idea. I mean, you and I were going back and forth on it the other day when we saw the news about Bylsma. And I do think as an assistant, it is a kind of a natural entry point for someone who, you know, I'm not aware of Larionov having coached a full season team. I think he's just coached with the Russian national team, which is mostly kind of tournament style play. But stepping into an assistant coach role, you know, you kind of got to start somewhere, right? And you don't have to start as a head coach to be a good assistant coach. And ultimately, he has enough, more than enough, actual lived experience playing hockey, playing for the Red Wings, playing obviously a big role for the Red Wings. And to know that, you know, obviously he knows what he's talking about. He doesn't have to have the length of resume that you might expect from some people who don't have the name recognition or the relevant experience, I guess is what they would call that category on a resume that Igor Larionov does. I think you can justify if the Red Wings want to go this way, and I don't know that, you know, it didn't sound like they have anyone at the tip of their mind right now. They're going to kind of survey their contacts, but, you know, especially, you know, I never know how much weight to put in, you know, because you and I hear things a lot more in our mentions that can kind of become Twitter echo chambers. And I never know how much stock to put in them. But I do think the case you can make for someone like Larionov to get a shot like this is interesting. I just also wouldn't get your hearts set on it, everybody, because they're also going to look at a lot of, I'm sure, other candidates who are already coaching in some capacity. But when you hear unique ideas, different mindset, that does say, you know, off the beaten path should at least be on their minds.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of how I view this, is because if you think about the kinds of guys that become assistant coaches, it's not typically guys already circulating in the NHL. It's either head coaches that have been fired and are looking for a way back in, and so they'll maybe take an assistant coach job, like, you know, Dan Bylsma, John Torchetti, you know, guys like that who have previously come through that were head coaches and then wanted another shot, and tried to do that by way of doing a good job as an assistant. Or it's guys that are poached from lower levels or around the world to sort of come in and bring those new ideas at a higher level. And I think if you're the Red Wings, to me, there's just not a whole lot of the guys. I'm not really interested in the whole bring the head coach that's been fired aspect in, just allow them to sort of use it as a stepping stone and kind of move that way, because that's what the Wings have done the last couple of times with Bylsma and Torchetti. And it just hasn't panned out. Sure, there's guys like Bruce Boudreau out there who seems to have a pretty nice offensive mindset, but at the end of the day, I want to hear something different. I want to hear something new. To me, there's a whole lot of growth that can happen with the power play. And I think the power play in particular has been an area where things just haven't necessarily grown or been as innovative as they really could have been. I mean, for years and years and years, we watched umbrella power plays. Now we've started almost watching every team run a 1-3-1. But, you know, what happened to playing from behind the net? What happened to running with five forwards? What happened? I mean, there's so many different ideas that can really exist. And to me, that's where I want to see someone new who is willing to come in and bring those. And so a guy like Larionov, I mean, you know, maybe you take a path similar to what the Hurricanes did with Rod Brind'Amour. Brind'Amour never coached anywhere and then is brought in as an assistant coach for the Hurricanes to work with their forwards and work with their power play. And he sticks there 7 years, and now he's the head coach of Carolina, and he's done an outstanding job there. But he was a guy that, you know, not necessarily the same sort of tactician in a sense of Larionov, but again, a highly skilled player that is a guy who's very relatable and can teach the game very well. And that's where I think bring in somebody new as opposed to sort of going for a retread who's been around the league and is not necessarily bringing in anything new or innovative that really fits that tactician description.
Thomas Vanek to run the power play. Who says no?
I mean, look, Vanek is a guy who's done an outstanding job. Mike Green's a guy who's done an outstanding job, all running different power plays. Now the question becomes, can they take their immense skill and be able to teach it? I think that's a huge barrier, and we see that more than just sports, that sometimes the people who are best at things are not necessarily the ones most capable of teaching it. So, but hey, I would not be opposed. If you told me you wanted to interview Thomas Vanek and Mike Green to run a power play, go for it, because they're guys who may bring something different. And if you feel they have the capacity to teach their ideas, then that's outstanding. And I would love to hear it. But Larionov's a guy who has done a nice job teaching young players in Russia, a guy who thought the game at an extraordinarily high level, and a guy who has a philosophy that I think would do a lot for Jeff Blashill in terms of just letting that rub off on him as well, to where he's a guy that I would absolutely love to see get an idea or get a shot. But, you know, like you said, Max, I think someone texted me today and asked, what would you put that likelihood of Larionov being the assistant coach one on a scale of 1 to 10? And I said a 1 because I just don't think it happens. But he's sort of the mold of guy that I want to see get that opportunity.
Yeah. Well, I will try to do some poking around and see if there's any names that are just kind of broadly on the market that people feel like deserve a look, deserve some recognition, or deserve to be talked about. I think assistant coaches is one of those things in the NHL that it's so hard to know much about. I mean, I believe Dean Evason in Minnesota was an assistant coach before he took over for Bruce Boudreau. You know, he's a guy that's going to be up for Coach of the Year this year, and I do wonder how many people outside of Minnesota and the Nashville organization where he had been before knew his name before he was the head coach of the Minnesota Wild. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, and that's part of the reason why is, like, if you can pull those sort of guys, like, you know, because Evanson, you know, I think he did a really nice job in Milwaukee for a long time before he came up to Minnesota. So, you know, being able to pull a lower level guy and letting him come in and do something different, I think, is outstanding. I mean, if you're looking for a guy that sort of fits that mold, I mean, Brad Lauer is a guy who, one, has history with Yzerman, as he was previously an assistant coach for Tampa between 15-16 and 17-18. And he actually ran Tampa's power play. And those years. I think they were 28th his first year, but then 6th and 3rd the 2 years after that. And now he's down in Edmonton in the WHL coaching the Oil Kings, and he won Coach of the Year last year. And the Oil Kings were ridiculous this year. So, you know, and he's been able to coach guys like Dylan Guenther and, you know, have some, you know, fun hockey teams there. So to me, like, he's another guy that, you know, you pull a guy like that back out of the WHL and say, hey, you want another shot at the NHL level? You know, that'd be an interesting, you know, way to go about things. And, but that's sort of the mold of like what I want to see. I don't want to see them bring in Bruce Boudreau to be an assistant coach. I don't want to see him do anything like that. Because number one, I think from an ego standpoint, what does that do to your head coach when you bring a guy like Boudreau in or another
guy? Well, he's already done that, though. Like, Jeff Blasher willingly brought in a Stanley Cup champion head coach. And, like, I don't think I definitely get where you're going. But, like, from, like, a, you know, are you threatened? Does the seat get hotter? But I just think Jeff Blasher's already done it, you know?
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of a difference between Dan Bylsma, who coached for a couple of seasons and won. Granted, he won the Cup with Pittsburgh, but then comes in a little bit later to Detroit, and you're still a younger head coach at that point. I think, what, they brought him in after Blaschel had 3 seasons under his belt. I mean, now you're talking about, I've been the head coach here for 6 years. I have a lot of people that have been telling me my seat is hot, and you bring Bruce Boudreau.
I'm not saying Boudreau specifically. I just mean, you know, like, I just think, you know, the fact that Blaschel brought in Bylsma and had to hear people, presumably, I mean, I guess he says he stays off Twitter, certainly more than I do. You know, I think he must have heard at some point the many calls for replace him with Bylsma, which we were hearing until early this year, I think, when people realized that, you know,
Dan Bylsma runs the power play.
Bylsma runs the power play, right? Like, and it's no shade against Dan Bylsma. That's just what the reality was. But a lot of people were calling for Dan Bylsma to be the head coach for at least 2/3 of his tenure. And that, you know, that did not deter Blaschel, I guess. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. It's just, to me, the optics of bringing in a guy like Boudreau, who's been a successful coach for so many teams, you know, all across the board, and has been in this game a lot longer than Blaschel, that just, it feels weird to me. But also at the same time, Bruce Boudreau is a known commodity, right? You know what you're going to get from him. He's not bringing in anything new unless he has gone out and decided he's going to do something different. And it's the same for all those head coaches out there that, you know, they're fired and they're going to bring the same thing back in. Like Daryl Sutter, they bring him back in Calgary. He's not bringing in anything different. It's the same damn Daryl Sutter. Like, you're going to get the same philosophy that has really sort of aged out from his Los Angeles Kings days. Like, he built a specific team. It worked that way. You're not going to get those same results if you don't change your philosophy and be willing to update. So, I don't know. I would hate to see them do that again, and it'd be, especially after having the first two with Bylsma and Torchetti, just not pan out.
Yeah, and I don't think you're wrong about that. Like, I ultimately think when you say you want fresh ideas, unique ideas, all that stuff, if you ultimately fall back, unless it's like a really specific person who's been in the NHL and they were really known for the tactics side specifically, I think the odds of bringing in someone who's like been an NHL lifer and getting unique ideas, at least as a coach, NHL lifer, are a little less than if you were to try someone who has at least a more limited, NHL coaching background, personally. Like, you know, but then you look at somebody like, and I'm not saying like Sheldon Keefe is like a power play wizard by any means or anything like that, but like, you look at, he's one of, I think, the better coaches in the NHL right now. And he's a guy who, Sheldon Keefe, played in the NHL, you know, like, it's not like you need someone who's like, you know, didn't come up in the NHL or anything like that, hasn't been around it. But I just think if you have someone who's used to doing things a certain way, I think that inherently conflicts with the idea of unique, fresh ideas.
Yeah. I mean, that's exactly it. Like, there's literally one person in the NHL who I would accept, like, coming back to Detroit to be the assistant coach, and is Jim Hiller. And outside of Jim Hiller, because Jim Hiller is literally the definition of a power play wizard. He's currently with the New York Islanders on their assistant coaching staff. So I don't know why he would come back to Detroit after being an assistant in 14-15. But really, he's the only guy that fits the definition of a wizard to me on the power play. I mean, I think in each of his assistant coaching seasons where he's run the power play, I think it's been 7 years, he has had one team not finish in the top 10 in expected goals per 60 on the power play. And that was the Islanders last year. and they were eighth this year. Like, that guy, he had Toronto at first for four consecutive seasons, all 4 years. He was there in power play expected goals for per 60. Like, that guy knows the power play. If you want to bring him in, great. Other than that, bring in somebody new with some different ideas.
I think that's fair. It sounds like as they start their search, that's what they're looking for. It always takes two to tango, and this is not a situation like a head coaching job where you can say there's only, you know, 32 of them now in the world, and if you want one, you got to take the one that is offered to you, unless you're offered to multiple. I mean, assistant coaching jobs, that's a little bit different ball game. There's different routes you can take. You know, there's obviously like three times more of the NHL assistant coaching jobs, but, you know, is an NHL assistant coaching job better than a head coaching job in college, in junior, in the American League, yada, yada. Those are real debates you can have, right? Like, Jeff Blasher went from NHL assistant to AHL head coach, and that was, you know, an upgrade before getting to NHL head coach, right? So I ultimately think, you know, it is you do have to be a little more careful that, you know, you can't probably pick your target and then there's a good chance they'll accept in the same way that there is with, I think, head coaching jobs. But, you know, I also think it gives you more room and that you can be more confident hiring someone with less of a resume. I wouldn't, for example, want to hire someone without any head coaching experience as an NHL head coach. But as an assistant coach, I think that's a different question. And you can bring in guys who, you know, maybe their best experience to this point is in college or something like that. I think that's a real thing you can do with an assistant that maybe you can't do with a head coach.
Yeah, and I mean, that's fair. It's sort of like, I sort of hate that to a sense, because it's almost like defining like entry level positions, and
there's some gatekeeping. I get it.
There is. And so part of me like doesn't like that whatsoever, particularly when like the coaching side of things is handled so differently than like the GM side of things, in the sense that, like, you know, okay, you're a former player, that means you can be a GM, but literally all of the skills to be a GM are not any of the skills of being a player besides knowing talent. It's like all the economics and business sides of things and whatnot. And that's just like, okay, yeah, that's totally fine. But then, you know, from a coaching standpoint, it's like, okay, well, you had to have been an assistant coach for X number of years somewhere before we're like willing to do this. And I think part of me is why the game sort of stagnates to an extent, because you're not willing to sort of push the envelope and challenge ideas and bring in people who just think differently and maybe can get different things out. But I get it. I get it. This is where we're at. And so at least do it with your assistant coaches.
I think it's fair. I think it's certainly fair. Anything else stand out to you from Yzerman's press conference, or anything else you want to say on the coaching topic?
I mean, I think that at the end of the day, you have to be impressed with his commitment to this plan that he's got. He's going to be very patient with it. And everything is, I mean, just listening to him, he's patient with his decision-making. He's level-headed with his decision-making. He's rational with his decision-making. And so it's really hard to nitpick what, the direction of the Red Wings right now. I think to me, you know, something we didn't hear, and obviously because it wasn't a focus for that coaching conference, but at some point, you know, we're going to have to talk about how this team ramps up and how this team really changes, or are they sort of going to sit here and play lottery odds for the next couple of years? That's sort of to be determined, but at least at this point in time, I mean, you have to be very happy with kind of the rational and level-headed decision-making.
Yep, I think that's fair. I did ask Yzerman a question about if he would be willing to part with picks or prospects in a trade, and I don't know that I got he answered it, but I don't know if it kind of changed any way that we look at things. What he pretty much said is he'd do it, but it has to be a player who's going to be around for 3, 4, 5 years. Be in kind of their age group, which, you know, he kind of laid out Dylan Larkin, Jacob Vrana, and Tyler Bertuzzi, you know, their age group, or younger, obviously. So I think that kind of gives you a cutoff of 26, 25 or younger, of players that he would look into. And I don't know if that's any new information. I think that's what we'd have guessed he was doing anyway, right?
Yeah, I mean, at least I would have guessed that. But just so you know, now you just committed Sam Reinhart to come into Detroit. So congratulations.
Well, he's an RFA, right?
Yeah.
So you could sign him for longer. I mean, like that, you know, I don't know if I committed Sam Reinhart to it, but would you say no to Sam Reinhart?
No, I would not say no to Sam Reinhart. I think he's a great hockey player.
Yeah. I wonder about like some of the, you know, like the guys in Arizona, like, you know, Connor Garland had a really nice year this year. He's an RFA. Does Arizona want to pay him? He's 25. I don't know.
I have no idea about anything that's going on in Arizona after, you know, well, just clearly neither literally, do I. Literally the tumultuous season they had from the ownership, like the Katie Strang article and all that. I have, and I mean, now they've forfeited their picks. They had a terrible draft last year. Like, this is a complete disaster. So I have no idea what's happening and how they're sort of, what their plan is to progress forward. They have certainly some nice pieces, you know, with Garland and Keller.
Schmaltz, Chychrun
obviously had a huge season this year. But I don't know what their trajectory is. Like, are they going all in now? Are they going to tread water? Are they going to backpedal? Like, who's to know?
Well, that's what's so interesting to me is, like, would it shock you if Arizona traded for Jack Eichel?
No, it wouldn't. Like, I wouldn't be shocked whatsoever if they decided that that was the route that they were going to go.
At the same time, would it shock you if they traded a 25 or younger, really good player like a Connor Garland in order to recoup some of the draft capital that they lost?
No, that's the thing. It's like, it's literally like spin the wheel and see what happens because I have no idea.
Maybe they'll do both.
Right. I mean, yeah, they literally could do both. And so, you know, they're just an interesting team in general to pay attention to. But, you know, I'm curious to see how this all shakes out. But, yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know that answer that he gives you really sheds any more light on anything we knew. I think it's very much, you know, we'll do what we have to do in order to make this team better kind of, you know, answer.
It wasn't a bad answer by any means. Like, no. He was honest. Yeah. I didn't feel like he was evasive. It was just like, you know, at the end of the day, he can't really get into too broad of hypotheticals here. And so I asked,
you don't want him to speculate on trades?
What?
You don't want him to speculate on trades? Like,
I very much want him to speculate on trades, but I don't expect him
like
to.
I can get him an HF Boards login if he wants, and he can just go to town on that.
Well, he is HF Boards.
That's fair.
He's the moderator.
That's fair.
Fun fact.
Oh, man.
Yeah, no. So, but you know, I did think, you know, it's relevant to say that he's willing to do some of that stuff. And, you know, I'm sure people will read the answer and wonder, Reinhardt, Eichel, something there. I wouldn't read it that way, but I certainly wouldn't rule it out. And I think that's kind of by design for him.
Yeah, I mean, literally, like, this is the definition of when the Penguins fans around the league, or really people around the league, used to always go Malkin. Like, is anytime a player was being held out for, you know, some reason, Malkin? Is Malkin being traded? It's the same concept now, except now we're just going to talk about every player under 25.
Eichel?
Eichel. Like, we're just going to do it. So you've created a new monster.
Oh, that's hilarious. The betting odds were like 9-1, weren't they?
For
way higher than I'd have expected.
To go to Detroit?
Yeah.
I think it was 9-1 or 10-1. I can't remember for sure. But, you know, more higher implied odds than I would have necessarily thought.
I don't know how much of it is because he does fit the age group, and the Red Wings are one of like six teams that can both accommodate his cap and have the assets that it would take to get him. I mean, I'm sure there's, on some level, it's like, you know, the odds of a given billionaire buying a hockey team are always not that crazy because they're one of like however many guys in the world who literally could do it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic.
See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Anything else stand out to you? I mean, I thought there was a comment at one point that caught my attention where Eiserman said, I think the quote was something like, he was asked about Jovani Smith, Michael Rasmussen, Dennis Cholowski, and Gustav Lindstrom. And he was talking about, you know, whether they would, you know, be on the roster, kind of saying he hopes that they're on the roster next year. And the quote was something like, you know, they would need waivers and they'd have to be pretty bad at this point to waive them or something like to be put on waivers. I thought that stood out. I thought that tells you, you know, you can kind of expect those four on the roster next season. I also found it interesting as it pertains to the expansion draft, because if you don't want to put those guys on waivers, how much overlap is there, you think, there between not wanting to expose them to Seattle?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's very interesting. I don't know that I would read that much into it to say that, like, okay, now Troy Stetcher is going to be exposed because they're going to, or Vladislav Namestnikov is going to be exposed because they want to protect those guys in that regard. I also wouldn't read into it in terms of him thinking, okay, I'm going to make a deal with Seattle such that they take X player.
Oh, I don't think he'll do that.
But, you know, I think I have a hard time reading into that quote just because.
Did it not make you more, like, more open to the possibility that Cholowski and Lindstrom get protected over Stetcher than you were a day ago?
I mean, I can tell you exactly that. I would absolutely protect Troy Stetcher. But
I would too, but I'm just saying,
I don't know that it really changes me, because if you think about it, at least with the way the Red Wings played Stetcher, I mean, he was a guy who sometimes was a healthy scratch for this team. To me, I think there's maybe a difference in perception between what some of the analytics models sort of suggest was Stetcher's kind of impact on the ice, and maybe the way he's necessarily perceived in the organization. And was he just a stopgap for a season that allowed the Wings to protect, you know, Lindstrom and Cholowski, and they're more than okay losing him? I mean, he is from that, you know, Vancouver, BC area, right?
I think he'd get taken if he's exposed.
I think he absolutely gets taken, right? I mean, you want to bring a guy back near his hometown. I'm sure he would be excited to go back near his hometown.
Analytics models love him.
And the model,
that's an analytics heavy org.
So, you know, I think he absolutely gets taken there. And so I think the Red Wings would basically be assured of, you know, being able to protect the guys they want, knowing that Stetcher's the guy that they're okay losing. If that's the case at the end of the day, then, you know, that's what they're going to decide. To me, I think that'd be a mistake, given that I don't.
But do you think it's more plausible of it happening now than you did before he said that?
I can't. I take nothing Steve Yzerman says at anything more than the exact words that came out of his mouth. You just, to me, he's a guy that will say very, not enough to, he says just enough to get you to think about the possibilities without at any point committing himself to any of those possibilities. And so I have a really hard time saying anything more than he likes those players.
All right. Well, I still would protect Stetcher. Like, my logic is they should protect Cholowski as the highest upside of the three, along with, you know, after Hronek. And they should protect Stetcher because I think Lindstrom's best case is still roughly a player equivalent to Stetcher, and Stetcher already is that player, and he's only 27. Now, the flip side might be he only has a 1-year deal, but it's not like you can't re-sign him. If you protect him, you can probably re-sign him.
Yeah, I mean, I would re-sign him, particularly if he gives you another solid season. So, you know, it's tough. Plus, you know, having another right shot defenseman, can't have enough of those on Detroit, right?
Right. I would protect Stetcher. I'm just saying, you know, I hear what you're saying about only taking it literally, but it certainly changed the way what I thought of as a slam dunk, you know, Hronek Stetcher and then battle between Cholowski and Lindstrom into slam dunk Hronek. And I don't know which two of the other three get protected. I'm just more open to that possibility than I was, because I do think it says something. If you don't want to put them on waivers, I know they're different scenarios, but like that kind of means you're worried about losing him, and you're going to lose somebody in the expansion draft. And that's ultimately the difference between waivers. You don't have to, you know, the thresholds for the cutoffs are just like, you know, they're orders of magnitude different. It's like 23 versus 10 or something like that. But it just, I'm just saying, it made me more open to that as a possibility than I would have been 30 hours
ago. At this point, nothing would surprise me. Nothing. So I will at least say that.
That's fair. If you don't like reading more into Iserman's comments than what was literally there, you're probably not going to like this next one either. But I could not help hear that quote. It had to be pretty bad to be put on waivers, and think back and say, what does this mean for Evgeny Svechnikov, who they waived twice this year?
Yeah. I mean, that's exactly it, right? I mean, so I don't think he's a part of the long-term, you know, plan here in Detroit. I know a lot of people will probably be upset about saying that, because really and truly for him, some of it was just out of his control with the number of injuries.
And he's a great guy. He's right. So likable.
And, you know, you absolutely love him as a person and just the energy he has. And you know, you can definitely see the skill there. But it's just like, at this point, he's 24. He's going to be 25 in October. And he hasn't been able to stick in the lineup. And you're now talking about your core of guys, all being guys with multiple seasons in the NHL by the time they're his age. And how does he knock really any of those guys out of a top six spot? And now he's being chased down by the next crop of guys coming in, you know, with Lucas Raymond and Jonathan Berggren. We're pretty much by the end of next season going to be talking about those guys potentially playing ahead of him in the NHL lineup. And so it becomes really hard to sort of spot out for him. For that reason alone, I would honestly almost think it's mutually beneficial for Svechnikov to be able to pursue an opportunity elsewhere, because I don't see it shaping up the way things have gone here in Detroit.
I want all the best for Evgeny. I just think the writing is on the wall.
I think so too. Like, I think the writing is absolutely on the wall. And honestly, that may be a great opportunity for him to be able to go prove it in another organization, you know, whether it's Seattle that has no prospects and therefore he's not being chased and could potentially get in. I mean, you look at what happened with Thomas Nosek in Vegas. He was a guy that just wasn't really sticking in the NHL lineup for the Red Wings. I think he was 23 when he got picked by Vegas, so a little bit younger there. But now he's a solid fourth line player and sometimes plays higher than that for Vegas. Actually, you know what? He was 24 when he got picked by Vegas. And so maybe it's a scenario like that where he finds a way to get into another team's organization that doesn't have the same sort of prospects knocking down the door. And who knows, maybe he's able to carve out a nice NHL career for himself.
Yeah, absolutely. Anything else stand out from Yzerman?
I don't know. It's very hard to read into anything. He said a lot of words. He answered a lot of questions. But at the end of the day, I don't know that I really know anything more about what he's thinking.
He did once say, I'm going to misquote this, but it was like the best quote I've ever heard him say. It was like, I wouldn't read anything into anything I say.
Yeah, I mean, it's right. It's literally right there.
But we can't not. Like, come on, that's our job.
I mean,
job.
It is our job to wildly speculate within reason.
No, not wildly, but like, you know, try to find the little X, the one next level beyond what he's saying. I don't know.
I will say, though, my favorite quote from him was not that. It was the one where he says, and I think I'm going to misquote this again, but he goes, there's a lot of players out there that I would really like, and I'm having a tough time convincing GMs to give them to me.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, I love it. I love it. There's a lot of players you want to add to this team. You just can't convince the GMs to give them to you. So, you know, I actually did enjoy that he seemed to have a little bit more fun and was a little bit more at ease.
He's fun. He's been really funny the last few. Ultimately.
Yeah. And honestly, you know, I think he has a blank check here in Detroit for everything he's done, for everything he continues to do. And honestly, I just want to see the next steps. I want to see some of this start to unfold. Because as patient as we're all going to be in terms of watching this rebuild, at some point there does have to be that flipping of the switch. And I think one of, you know, we've talked at length with all these rebuilding teams how, you know, one of the issues was they jumped in too quickly and they started to turn the knob too quickly. They started to dial things up you know, Buffalo goes out, they trade for Eric Staal, they get Jeff Skinner, they do lots of crazy things, and that completely derails them. You know, Edmonton goes out, they get Milan Lucic, they decide that they don't need Taylor Hall, and they instead need Adam Larson. I mean, the teams go out and do crazy things, and it submarines them. But at the same time, there is also the problem of not pursuing more aggressive options and continuing to sit with just waiting on draft lottery odds. Because sometimes those lottery odds, as they continue, as the league adds more teams, as the league continues to crack down on tanking and wants to make the lottery odds even worse, it's much harder to rely on that than it was 6 years ago when you had a 25% chance of picking first. And so that's why I know a lot of people didn't like him, but I offered opportunities that you have to do something that fundamentally changes your scheme, and you can't just sit and wait on your own draft pick. You got to go out, you got to get multiple firsts that are going to be in the lottery. You got to go out, or you got to go out and you got to pursue other options to get players, whether it's an offer sheet, something crazy like that. So I'm very curious to see how this goes, because I know he's preached patience, but at some point there is an issue with being too patient and just waiting on those draft odds.
I'm going to go ahead and guess that posed a question on this topic. Steve Eisenman would say something to the effect of, there's a lot of 2022 and 23 unprotected first round draft picks that I'd like. I just can't get any other GMs to
That's
give
exactly
them to
it, right? You know, who's to say that he hasn't tried, right? That's the other thing. We're not privy to that information.
I pictured him just like calling up, you know, Kyle Dubas. Hey, Kyle, can I get Matthews? Oh, okay. All right.
And then it's literally him putting the phone
Let
down.
Let me know if that changes.
It's him putting the phone down at that point. He then picks up his, contact list. And then it's like, all right, let's spin the wheel. Hey, Ken, can I get Connor McDavid? What about Leon Draisaitl? Okay, nope. All right, let's go to the next one. All hey, right. Boston.
Joe right? Sakic.
Let's go to Joe Sakic. Hey, can I have Nathan MacKinnon? No. What about Cale Makar? So, you know, it's a fun idea to think through. But, you know, at the end of the day, with all that being said, I love the patience. I love everything he's done so far. But there will be a point in time where I think relying on draft odds is not going to be enough. And that's sort of the move that I think needs to happen in the next 1 to 2 years if you're going to dig out of this rebuild and start moving things forward correctly, not jumping too early, but doing it correctly.
I agree with you. And I think, you know, as he identifies guys like Larkin, Bertuzzi, Verana as the age group that they – you know, that as kind of the upper threshold of that age group, I think you have to be mindful that you do want to get at least 2 or 3 years of those guys in their prime a crack at it, which indicates you got to be ready to be at least vying for the playoffs in the playoffs within 2 to 3 years.
Yep. And I mean,
vying for the playoffs sooner in the playoffs.
Yeah. I mean, you need to be knocking on the door in Blashill's second year of this contract, in my opinion.
Yep. I agree with you. I think so too. And I'm sure there are some Matvei Michkov and Connor Bedard enthusiasts out there who don't want to hear it. But I think the best case scenario for this franchise is to, you know, take another step forward next year and to be at least in the kind of position that like the New York Rangers were in this year in 2022-23.
Yeah, exactly. And again, just because you're taking that step forward doesn't necessarily mean that you're now not eligible for those. That's the whole importance of getting those extra lottery picks, because conceivably, if you think about some of the other rebuilds that have happened, you know, across other leagues, like you look at some of these deals, like the Boston Celtics were able to turn a monster deal by dealing Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett over to the Brooklyn Nets into multiple first round picks such that they actually started getting good and were still picking in the lottery. And so, you know, you get creative, get imaginative, like pick on those teams that think they're better than they actually are. Pick on Columbus. Pick on Nashville. Nashville was a bad team.
I think Columbus knows
I mean,
now.
Columbus knows
Columbus
now.
Columbus knows now.
But Nashville was a bad team, very bad team, the first half of this year.
Yeah.
And they got really hot late and pushed their way into the playoffs. That's a team that, number one, fundamentally, Philip Forsberg, I love him, great. Victor Arvidsson's great. That's an aging team that doesn't really have a lot of roster moves, that also doesn't have a lot of great prospects. And that's a team you can pick on as, hey, that bottom is about to fall out. You know, Philly was another team that I threw out this year. I think people laughed at me initially until they watched Philly crater. Philly, I still think, is going to come back next year and say, we're better than this. We have Claude Giroux. We have Jacob Voracek. We have Travis Konecny. We can be a better hockey team. But Philly's another team without great prospects and can have the bottom fall out. And so pick on those teams, and there's a chance you can get better on the ice while still getting better in the draft. And that's sort of the moves that need to happen, I think, for the Red Wings to kind of take that next step.
Yeah, you're looking for next year's Columbus or last year's San Jose, right? Like, you're looking for the team that
or is Ottawa before
only
then.
Months away. Yep.
So that's
what's that?
Ottawa before then, right? That's how it all got kicked
off. Ottawa before then. Yeah.
So yeah, that's who you need to pick on. And if you can do that, then you become Colorado drafting Bowen Byram with fourth overall pick.
Already a
playoff team. Exactly. That's how you do it. Obviously, yes, they were able to pick up Landeskog and McKinnon, and that's a huge part of things. And they hit on Mikko Rantanen as well as a top 10 pick. But, you know, being able to still then get Bowen Byram in a pick like that really makes them into a juggernaut team is sort of what I'm getting at.
Would you take like a 2024 first round pick from a Boston, an Islanders, whatever, a team like that? Just, you know, you don't even know who the guys in 20, at least I don't even know who the guys in 2024 are next year, but you can just confidently say if it can turn into a top 10 pick, you know, at a time when you expect to be in the playoffs, you know, that variance is kind of almost
worth
it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that I've ever seen a pick traded that far out, because I just don't think, I think a lot of people think very short-sighted, but really you want to play on that variance. You want to play on that 2023 or 2024 pick. Because they're in 2024, think right now, who can you confidently say is going to be a playoff team? I can say Colorado, and I can say Carolina, but
Toronto, I think.
Can probably say Toronto, although at some point you have to wonder if their salary cap issues manifest if the cap's not going to escalate. Now, granted, they have all their big guns all locked up. But is there going to be a point in time where they maybe have to think about how they supplement the rest of the roster? They've done a nice job by bringing in cheap veterans. Maybe they can keep doing that. So you probably pencil them in. But beyond...
It's possible Tampa's
not. You're right.
Not.
That's what I mean. Tampa's going to have to deal with the cap.
Yeah.
And Florida, we don't know that much about. I mean, maybe if they're able to keep Barkov. But Tampa's going to have to do another Braden Point contract next year, right? So... or maybe in 2023, I can't remember for sure. But in the next 1 to 2 years, they have another Braden Point contract to deal with. So, you know, there's no guarantee there for Tampa. And so outside of that, I can't really confidently say who's going to be a playoff team. So that's why you pick on those teams.
Let me look when Tampa has all their guys coming up, because I'm very fascinated by this. I love their roster.
I mean, Kucherov's long-term, Vasilevsky's long-term, Hedman's long-term. Stamkos is still...
Point is next summer.
Yeah, so, okay, Point's the big one.
And he's... That's a last RFA year, I believe. So that has to either be long or it's going to be a walk.
Yeah.
I mean, I assume that's got to be a $9 million plus deal.
You'd
right?
have to assume it's at least that. And so that's where...
They do get Palat's money come off the books at that same time.
Yeah.
So they can replace with that. What are they going to do this summer with Coleman and Barkley Goudreau? What are they going to do this summer with... Ross Colton's a guy that came in and scored more than I think anyone would have expected. I assume they're going to have to bridge him here. They're going to have to do a deal for Cal Foote this summer. They did get a couple good, some good term on those two defensemen last summer in Sergachev and Chernak. Those guys are locked up through 23.
Yeah, so,
but that's still before 24
right,
to our
right.
point.
And so there's still, to me, there's a number of teams that have a lot of question marks about what they're going to be. And that's maybe the kind of moves that I sort of want to see over the next 1 to 2 years is going after those teams that have those big question marks.
All right. Anything else before we wrap up?
That's all I got.
All right, me too. Thanks for listening today. Thanks for being patient with us until we had some of this stuff to talk about. And would really love to hear from you guys, especially next week or leading into next week, about what you want to hear us talk about. If there's we don't have anything right, you know, on the schedule for right now. So if there's something you've always wanted us to get to, and maybe I've ignored you, I apologize. I have not done it on purpose. Email me, DM me, whatever you want to do. My email, I think, is on the stories on The Athletic that you can go to, but it's mbultman@theathletic.com. Would love to hear from you with your kind of like dream segments from us, and we'll see how many of them we can get to next week. So thanks so much, and we'll talk to you then.